Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage, the podcast. I'm Chad Haas from the Developer Relations team.
I'm Yeet Boyer from the Android Jetpack team.
We totally did it out of order.
You cut me off, Yeet.
I have to start again.
I'm Romain Guy from the Android Toolkit team. And today, this is a special episode because we have an external guest.
External. Who let them in?
My name is Mike Nakimovich. I'm an Android engineer at Dropbox.
And what was your leading question? Why are you here?
That's a good question. I'm here because I've been stealing Yeet's effort away from Google, and we've been working on a open source library called Store.
Well, that's why you've been slacking off at work.
I am not slacking off at
So Store is kind of it's like a subset of repository, isn't it? Was this like thought out? Is this intentional?
That's right. It originally started to be a repository library, but we never figured out how to do writes correctly. So really, it's a good replacement for loading data on Android.
So for the listeners, I'm raising my hand. Can we back up a minute? What is a repository?
Sure. All right.
I mean, I know repositories of code. I assume that's not what we're talking about.
Yeah. When I talk about repositories, I think of it as an abstraction for loading and parsing and saving your data. So you have repositories so that your UI doesn't have to talk directly to I/O, to either disk or to network. It'll talk to the repository, which can then have centralized access rules depending on where it's going to load the data from.
It is an abstraction. I think of repository as the vague blob in the diagram that we drew in the architecture components guidance where we said, and then in the middle of all of the stuff we're providing you, you're going to write something called a repository. And here are the kinds of things that a library like this might do that we're not giving you.
Yeah, that's why you usually shrug and go, whatever you want.
So I guess that maybe that's a starter question, besides what is a repository, was why wasn't it there already and now why?
Yeah, Yeet, why did you let Mike do all the work? Like, why didn't you do that?
Yeah, I don't know Arch components. What we were doing. It's something we always wanted to do from the first time we had the list of things we want to do. We just never get around to do it. It's not trivial. It's relatively more complicated because it deals with multiple pieces of your application, and it depends on your use case a lot. Like, this is one of those things where it's relatively easier for you to write for just your own use case, but it's very hard to make a library when you need to support very different use cases.
It's one of those things where the generic version might be so complicated that you might not use it just because it...
Yeah, it becomes a big API trouble. And Mike had a library store before, something he wrote when he was working in New York Times, and it could solve some of the problems, but it wasn't where we wanted it to be. And it kind of literally with Kotlin and coroutines and with the adoption, we're actually able to provide nicer looking libraries that can cover more cases without being too complicated. It's a bit almost like I'm glad we didn't try to write this thing 3 years ago because we wouldn't be able to create this version.
Wait, so what's the difference between then and now?
Coroutines, Kotlin.
Okay.
Now, I think also is also the environment shifts. Like when we created the first set of architecture components like Room, like having an observable database that you can change whenever you want and you are observing it. Like people were definitely doing it. We didn't invent it, but we provide a very easy way to do it.
Yeah.
And that wasn't something that existed before. So once you have it and people start using it, then a technology like repository starts making more sense because you want to merge it with your network data. Basically, you want to be able to easily merge all of your data sources, and you're looking for a solution to do that. Before, most people didn't even care about it.
So is that the main reason to use a repository? Let's say I only have a database in my app and no network. I don't know. That would probably be a lame application, but observables are already kind of an abstraction on top of your database, right?
Yeah, I mean, like honestly, you don't... It depends how much you want to over-engineer.
Well, I'm an Android app developer at that point, so I probably really want to over-engineer.
Then you shouldn't and not.
Abstractions for abstraction's sake, I believe, right? I mean, more abstraction is a good thing, so more must be better. So yeah, why wouldn't you? Okay, so if you're only ever writing to one data source, probably not. But I think the canonical example you always had is, well, you have a database on the local device, and then you have network with, you know, long-term storage or whatever.
Yeah. It's the most common case. Plus, like, even if you don't have a proper database for whatever reason, like, you have caching. The easiest thing to, like, caching is actually very easy to get wrong and leak out of memory or not cache the right things. And having a using a library like store can just totally fix it for you. You just need to configure it to say what kind of cache you want and let it handle it for you.
Okay. All right. So we'll segue into store then. So what is it now? Because first of all, where is it in its release cycle? It's alpha?
Yeah, right now we're in version 4 alpha.
Okay, version...
Alpha 1.
It sounds like a Jetpack library.
Version 4. So there's been like stable versions of 1, 2, and 3?
There have been stable versions of 1, 2, and 3, but they were all built using RxJava rather than coroutines.
Oh,
and the first three versions did not have great support for what Yeet described, observable data sources. So it worked nicer when network just gave you a single value and database just had a scalar API. You will then be able to wrap it in store.
So does that mean that store version 4 is rewritten entirely in Kotlin, or did you just put a Kotlin layer on top of the existing implementation?
The former. We first took the code as it was written in Java, converted it to Kotlin while it still used RxJava, and we wanted to make sure that we had all the tests that passed before, since we did have 4 years of consumers in this library. And then we started converting the APIs from RxJava to coroutines. And we finally removed our last dependency, which was a Guava cache. So now we're 100% in Kotlin and set up to work in Kotlin multi-platform.
It was actually very interesting because, so like when I came into the project, they already converted all of the code to coroutines, but it was the same functionality as RxJava, but only in Kotlin and coroutines.
So what did you do exactly?
tried to rewrite it, which failed, and then rewrite it again, and I think we got to something good. We wanted to this. So when you're writing a repository layer, like the idea of let me fetch some data from the network and cache it, and maybe also save it to a file, that's actually fairly straightforward to make it work. The problem is, when someone is using an application, so if you write an app like that, every time user makes a change, it needs to go to your network, and then you need to fetch the data again from the network so the UI updates, which is a horrible user experience. So it's like, imagine someone, you know, like you delete an email from your email, and then you just wait until it runs through to your network before seeing that email disappear. That's really bad user experience. So what you want to do is you want to immediately execute this action, which means you need to do it in your local source of truth, which is commonly the database. You basically want to go and mark that record as deleted immediately. Now, this brings a very complicated problem because you have a local source of truth that changes, so that's observable. And like Room or SQL, Delight or RAN, all these databases support this. On top of it, you have data coming from the network that might also change the database. And synchronizing these two is fairly complicated. And that's basically what we have worked on for this last 3-4 months, along with, like, you know, rethinking our APIs and functionalities with the new Kotlin coroutines world. Something very interesting we did was we wanted to make sure all of the existing behavior still works. So we wrote a testing abstraction which would run all of our tests with store 3 implementation and the new store 4 implementation, just to make sure they're still working. And up until like once we finally passed all the tests with the new implementation, then we have deleted the previous implementation.
So I'm curious, if I'm writing an app and I want to use store, what do I have to do? For instance, you talked about there's a database and a network layer. Do I have to provide my own network layer implementation? Can I use my own database, or do I have to use whatever store decided to use?
Store's not opinionated at all. We try to delegate all of the actual sources to you.
That's so smart.
So think of it as store is the coordinator that does the business logic between your sources, but we're not opinionated about what you need to do. So you're passing in a few closures for what your reader, writer, and fetcher APIs are to a builder, and then we return a store.
So the logo should just be like a shrug. Just like, yeah, whatever. So I had a question about this, which is...
So you know, middleman.
Could be. I figured it would be sort of, you know, you could use the database that you want and the network layer that you want. But that means the way I picture it in my mind, I'm looking at the architecture components diagram where like it's sitting in the middle, which means it's kind of an API at the top and the bottom, right? So you have an API for people to call the repository, and then you have another API at the bottom layer of the repository where you plug in a database, a network layer, whatever it is you're storing to. So how does that help me understand how that works from an API perspective? Like, how do you say this is the storage mechanism?
You just said so.
Not in enough detail for my little brain.
So maybe if we give an example, that will be easier. So imagine you have an application where, you know, you're looking at user profiles. It sounds like Tinder. So there's a user in the UI and you want to get their information. So you tell the store you have built, you say, give me a user. You send a query. You say, this is the user ID. Give me the actual user object. In return, store gives you a stream, a Kotlin coroutines flow of users. What internally store does is, so when you set up this store, you said, here is my database write function. Here is my database read function, which also happens to return a flow. And here is the function that maybe uses retrofit to fetch this object. So you provide these three functions to store when you build store.
Okay, so is it an interface that you implement for the
it's
thing
just
at
a
the
function,
bottom layer?
Like no, literally closures. Function.
Huh.
Some of the nice things about using Kotlin, or you could do Java 8 too. But it's just a function. You say, like, you basically give us a function that receives a user ID or whatever the key is.
Okay.
And returns a user. So what store then does is it looks in, when you make this request to store, it looks at the cache. If there's a cache value, returns it. And then it also goes to the disk or goes to the network depending on your request. Because you can also say, like, a very common use case is you open your Twitter feed. As soon as you open the application, you want to see that feed. You don't want to wait. And as soon as, like, Twitter is able to get your new tweets, you want to see the new tweets as well. So the very common pattern is, you want to see the cache data first and then the refresh data as soon as it's available. And with store, all you do is the same API. You say, store, get me the list of tweets, return me cache ones, and also fetch from the network. And store takes care of, you know, calling your network, saving it into database, reloading it again. Like, all of that coordination between your database and fetcher and cache is all managed by store.
So how does it get the information about these three different pieces of data, the local storage, the cache, and the network?
Are these the functions you have provided? Yeah, store doesn't even know it's a database, it's just a function from store's perspective.
Okay.
So, sorry, I'm still mesmerized by Chet's questions. I had an actual question. Oh, yeah. So imagine this coordination can be... Yes, I know, Chet. So I imagine that this can be pretty complicated, especially coordinating all those different sources of data. What kind of control do you give to the user, for instance, on how often to refresh the cache? If I write to the database and it needs to be followed by a write to the network to send that information to the cloud, like, can I control that, or is that just all decisions made by the library itself? How often does it happen?
It depends. The write support we're still working on. Of what to do if you need to update an API, or what to do if you update the data and then need it to update something. And that, again, is just a complicated problem where we're having trouble finding a generic solution that'll work for everyone.
Right, which is why I'm asking, because it sounds like it can, like, if you don't have opinions in the library, it seems that it can be an unbounded issue. And in the end, you might end up with a library that you ask the user to do so much work that why is the library even there, really?
Right, exactly. So we try to make it simpler. Some of the other things that you can configure, so you can configure memory cache expiration. And similar, if you do write to, you know, we're using Room for most of the use cases, most examples that we've worked with. If you're backing it with Room and you insert something to that Room table or whatever is backing your query, the store will re-emit the new data. So we kind of see it as standing on the shoulders of giants. We don't really need to have you side effect into store or invalidate something as long as the sources that are backing it, you're updating. So even for updates, you can just, you know, run your own retrofit update function and then write the result of that update to the database. And any store listening to that database's records should be able to get the new data.
Okay. Yeah, because one of my follow-up questions was, you know, whether you integrate with Work Manager, for instance, to do some of those, you know, IO queries. But I assume that would be part of the function, right? Like, that's my job to handle that.
Yeah, precisely.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, the things that I feel that this does really well is the things that I keep doing wrong. As I build apps, I'm not great at threading, not great at synchronizing. I might call
I don't think anybody is.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's a hard problem. And I might call the same config store from a UI element, from a repository, from the application class, and somehow I want only one of those requests to go to network, the rest of them to block. And those are the types of problems that store will handle for you, so that you're just abstracting, give me the data. You're not saying, did someone already ask for this data? Did someone get an error when they asked for this data? You're kind of leaving all of that logic up to the store, right, which will then give you the result types back.
So it sounds like you're really focused on the part of the repository problem that you know everybody will have, and you leave like the specificities of every app to the app, because that's something they would have to do anyway if they didn't have the library.
Yep, and we try to close that gap as much as we can. We have an issue tracker, we're public, so as people are giving us new use cases, we're trying to figure out a way that we can make it configurable while still keeping the simple case of just give me data as easy as it is now.
And does store provide, or will provide, you think at some point, you know, additional libraries, for instance, to do like integration with Room or Easy or with Retrofit, or so that I have to do even less work?
Like, we always think about is, honestly, for especially for database, I don't know how easier can it get. Like, all you're doing is a reference to your DAO. That
you know, developers, like, as long as I have to write, you know, more than one line of code, it's too much.
We do have a file system persister that you can build a store with, okay, that will save to files and have a built-in JSON parser, so you don't need to configure anything. You can just have a file saving store.
And I was going to say, like, writing to a file system correctly is not that easy either. So it's good that if you did it for me.
I don't know if you did it properly, but
at least
I can blame him.
It's actually one of the good reasons to use a library. You don't need to deal with the bugs. You just create an issue.
Or you do have to deal with the bugs and you report them, and then you have to wait for the fix.
Oh, you think you can fix it yourself? It's open source for a reason.
I was waiting for that.
Yeah.
So I was curious whether, so now that you have filled in to an alpha level, at least the vague blob in the middle that says repository, is it changing anything that you want to do in the architecture components that were around it? Like, is it able to take on any functionality that before we were handling at the view model level or Room or whatever?
No, not actually. Like, this store perfectly fits to the like architectural guidance document we wrote 3-4 years ago. So it just fills in a blank. What I personally want to do is eventually, you know, this is just alpha one, stabilize, like make sure the store API we are providing works with multiple people, and then start changing our samples to use store. I basically promote it. We already had, like, it's just a simple problem of merging your network requests with your local data and synchronizing is complicated. We even had a section in the guide on how to do this. At the time, we wrote a class called Network Bound Resource that will do this for you. And like so many people copied it into their application and used that one. They will just do it for one resource. So I hope that store will develop, people will move to Kotlin coroutines, and we'll be able to just change our recommendation to, instead of having that complicated class code you copy, like, here, just use this library, and then boom, it works. And that's like my goal. I don't know when we can hit it.
So what other functionality do you need in the library for it to get to that place? Like, beyond where you're at with the API in alpha? Like, do you see other features?
I think better integration with paging is something that were always open for issues on store before, and as store 4 started a new repo, that was the first issue that someone opened of how can this work with paging correctly?
Paging as in the paging library for
Recycle? That's right, the Android X paging library, so that does a store wrap a paging list? Does a paging list wrap, just delegate to the store for its request? And we're still trying to figure out what a nice way to work with a paginated store is.
I would suggest you just draw in the middle of the diagram a blob that says integration with paging, and then you just leave that up as an exercise to the reader, right?
I think you should open a ticket for that.
I don't know. I can do the same trick twice.
I think you can, actually. I think we can do it for our entire software careers. What we do. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. First, you define the problem, and then if you get around to it, you do a solution, right?
And if you don't, it's...
it's someone else's problem, by definition. Yep. All right, so we hit alpha. When I say we, I mean we. So you hit alpha, and now what? Do you have time frames that you're aiming toward?
Not really. We wanted it to be public so that we can start having folks start using it in the community.
Yep.
We've already found bugs with our caching of if there wasn't a source of truth.
That, bugs in caching, really?
Yeah, right? Yeah, but you know, we both have found bugs that were reported. We have fixed bugs ourselves. We've had community members, people that we've never met, have started contributing to the project and fixing issues that we had. Right now, I think the API is fairly solid. We just want to make sure before large production applications start using it that it's been a little hardened and a little battle-tested in some samples or in some...
So speaking of a large-scale production app, so I assume that Store, you didn't create it, you know, for no reason. It was used or is used in real applications. So where is it used, like up to V3?
New York Times is still using it. We use it at Nike, which was my last job. I did a decent amount of consulting. So there's a bunch of little startups all over New York that are using it as well. I don't know publicly what other apps have really used it. GitHub just doesn't give us good tracking.
We could find that out.
Hey, I got friends that have information. Perfect.
V4, I assume, is not currently, as you know, used in production apps yet, right?
That's right. We're hosted. We took over development from New York Times just because we have more resources to continue this project. We haven't integrated it into Dropbox's main application yet, but it's gone through our architecture reviews. Like, internally, people have signed off that this feels like reasonable APIs and the direction that things should go. We're as cautious as everyone is. We have 500 million users, and we want to start it somewhere small, maybe in one of our secondary apps, and then start integrating it into our main
application. Please don't break my Dropbox app.
Yeah, actually, like, so working in this project was very interesting for me personally, because in Android X, all of the code we write is open source, right? Like, people see our CLs. But unfortunately, we rarely get pull requests.
Like, Garrett?
People don't really... I don't know what to blame, but...
It's a little bit of a barrier of entry, right? Like, for better or worse, now everybody uses GitHub. So if I find a random project on GitHub, I know exactly what to do to contribute. And probably not the case with our Garrett repository. It's not hard, but if you don't know what to do...
Maybe it's a familiarity problem. Like, it's not hard at all. But when we were talking with Mike before we announced the repository, and Mike was like, he was like, yeah, we're going to get a lot of contributions, whatnot.
We have 53 contributors.
Yeah, like I was like, no way anybody will contribute. It's fairly complicated project, very few people know Scotland Coroutines, whatnot. And then like we announced it like a day after, 2 days after, we got the first CLs coming in from people, like making little fixes here and there. Someone rewrote this Guava cache, which is like a major thing. I was so amazed and also said, like, why don't we have this in Android X?
There's a reason why I keep wanting to move Android X to GitHub.
The community also wants you to move it to GitHub.
I know. I mean, so I assume that story is on GitHub, right? Based on the conversation.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just checking.
But I can't believe how effective it was. Like, I'm really surprised. Maybe Mike has, like, everyone knows Mike, so they really wanted to work with the project.
I've had a similar experience, you know, with Filament, which is a very, very specific library, like high-end 3D graphics. We also got, you know, quite a large number of contributions fairly quickly, and I was also surprised by that, but, you know, they keep coming regularly. Again, I think because, you know, it's easy for folks to do so.
Yep, I've contributed to the GVR project, and it was, again, it's Google, but it was on GitHub, so right. I was able to just fix small things in it.
Yeah, I felt very sad. I don't know. You're
looking at me like it's my decision. It's like, I don't know.
Hey, you're DevRel, you're supposed to be the interface with the community.
You're not...
I appreciate your feedback. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fix that chat.
So you had mentioned paging. I didn't understand. Was that specifically like... you would like this feature to be part of whatever you release for version 4, or this just like it's on your list of things you want to add eventually?
Yes.
Or are there, okay. All right. But you see, like in an ideal case, this would be part of stable for version 4.
Yeah, I think so. We don't really have a big plan besides we released alpha, hoping that there'll be a bunch of big bugs that we uncovered and didn't notice. It hasn't really happened. I don't really have a mental blocker of when this can go to stable. As an example, we went to version 1 with Store when we originally released it, and 2 weeks later, we realized we had the wrong API, and that's when Store version 2 came out. So I'm okay with releasing a stable version. If it's hardened, we have tests around everything, and if we need to do a major version bump past that, I'll take the blame and any of the negativity for it.
Okay.
But then on the other hand, like we are very careful on the Android X side with our stable versions. So I want to be a lot more cautious. So, you know, like, let's wait, let's see people use it. Let's make sure we have, like, you know, a couple of hundred applications shipping with alpha. So we see some data, we make sure it works, and then we call it a beta or stable. We'll find a common ground.
That sounds like an actual plan. I like that. Yeah.
Or also in the future, like, would you change the API? Like, clearly things have changed radically between 3 and 4 for very good reasons, because you're kind of, you know, rebuilding the entire thing. Could you see this thing changing between 4 and 5? The reason I ask is, so you were talking about, wouldn't it be nice if there were samples using this thing that basically implements what you had in mind to begin with? I think that's a great idea, but one of the things that that's kind of nice to see with our libraries that we ship is like, well, if we build content and documentation around them and then they change, like, it's really hard to update that stuff, right? So there's a migration over the last probably 4 years where support library used to kind of change all the time if we needed to. And then we started treating it more like a platform. Like, we really don't make breaking API changes unless we absolutely need to. But I don't know if that is, like, do you think this is in its life cycle at the point where you could do that?
Well, we also switched to a versioning scheme that tells you if we are making, you know, major changes, right? Like, we use 7.2 versioning, which helps a lot understand, yeah, like, what's going on if you take that version.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, I mean, it definitely helps for people who know what they're doing. And for the rest of the folks, I'm not sure. Like, no, but maybe people just don't know.
At least
what
it's documented, right? Like, you can find that explanation.
True. Yeah. Like we are at least based on a, like, you know, well-defined structure that we didn't invent and other people.
And when you're used to that, like, you know, hearing that store 4, like, is completely rewritten from scratch in Kotlin, like, that doesn't shock me, because now I'm used to a major version change can imply something like this, and, you know, paging is going down the same path.
I think the problem with Android X, or like some of our libraries, actually, okay, so paging is doing this with paging 3.
Yep.
Actually, I think we're going to keep binary compatibility. We are evaluating it, but it's a complete rewrite with Kotlin. And we are able to do it also because, like, there was a bunch of problems in the paging 1 and 2 that it's very hard to solve, and we're like, you know what, we just need to reiterate this problem, take advantage of Kotlin and coroutines.
It's also more fun to start from scratch.
Yeah, there's also that. So you need to have a very, very good reason to break API. Like,
yeah,
the bar is very high to do that inside Android X. And maybe like something like App Compat is almost impossible to break the API. And we suffer this with fragments. Like, we know there are problems in fragments, we want to fix them. But if you fix it, a bunch of people relied on that being broken. Their applications will break. So now we are breaking people. Like, it's sometimes not that trivial if you are a very core library. It's much easier if you are a leaf library.
The price of success.
Yeah, I'll actually answer your question.
I thought they were just going to keep riffing on that.
It doesn't seem like it. The API seems like it's dynamic enough where we can change what the request types are.
Yeah.
We've hardened it to a result type. I don't think there was nothing between 2 and 3 besides going from RX1 to RX2 and adding additional functionality. I don't see anything big changing where I would see dev advocacy being angry at me that they had to rewrite all the code labs again.
Well, you say that now, but, you know, you started with RX, you switched to coroutine. Who knows, like, in a couple of years.
You don't know how angry these people are at their core.
That's right. We're going to Rust next.
Well, yeah, that sounds interesting. Tell me more.
I think what works is, like, we come from different directions. Like, I'm very conservative because of Android X, and, like, Mike nice to move fast. So we're finding a pretty good balance. And there's a lot of other people, like, some of them work in New York Times, in Dropbox, still contributing to this project. So there's a lot of, I don't know, sound voices in the room to make any breaking decision, whatnot.
Right.
But it's also why having an alpha is very useful, where like people use that alpha, we get the opinions. So hopefully we find the major issues early on, the same way we do it in Android X.
Yep. All right. What did we not ask?
No, I did have a question, but I forgot. Give me time.
I did. Maybe Mike, you can share your opinions when we migrated from RxJava to coroutines.
Ooh.
Like, so you're at a position where I don't know RxJava much. You know, we used it just when we needed Versus like Mikey wrote a library, knows it in depth, and then needs to move this library to coroutines. I'm sure it was a very interesting adventure for you. Yep. How did it feel?
Yeah, absolutely.
And do you regret it?
Yeah, we hit on this during our Kotlin Conf talk as well that everyone should watch. And when we wrote it initially in RxJava, we had about 40 operators for all the different functional for how to handle errors, how to filter, how to switch from one data from one source to another. And as we were going to coroutines and flow, it seemed like most of these weren't needed anymore because we were just writing imperative code where it felt simpler. So we were able to eliminate most of the operators. You know, we still had some maps, some filters for doing things for a particular key that someone's passing in. And then we kind of hit our first weird area. And this is something that I have felt that every data loading library should inherently do. And it's having some concept of throttling or multicasting. And I feel like this is the one thing that I kept like, if there was one thing that I kept repeating to Yeet, is I want to have multiple sources hit the same store and I only need one response. And I get it that we can handle this on other layers, but it felt like even if everything else in the app was not done optimally, as long as the store throttled the data, you would at least not waste megabytes and not waste networking or any other I/O that you're doing. So we started looking at it and try to do this in flow. And RxJava had really nice constructs called share. And think of share as you make a flow, you make a stream, you add a share operator to it. As long as a request is in flight, so someone subscribes or collects that that observable, as long as the request is still in flight and has not come to the first consumer, any additional subscriber or consumer will share that same response. It'll piggyback on the same request.
So it basically multiplexes the response to...
That's right.
Okay.
But if one or, you know, if the first one finished before the second one started, it'll restart the producer again to get a fresh response. And we kept trying to add like flow.share and it wouldn't compile. And then I kind of started looking at what RxJava is doing, try to rewrite it, and it just didn't work. And the reason that we actually started with coroutines was we just wanted to be cool and use the latest thing. And I know Android seems to not really like RxJava. And you're like, all right, fine, we'll just do it. But what we actually learned through the process is something called structured concurrency. And I explained this as RxJava warns you that you might leak. Coroutines forces you not to leak. And I see this as scope. So when you do something like an observable, you can create an observable without saying what scope you're opening this in, what life cycle are you creating this in, which makes sharing really easy since you just have a global reference to some observable and it inherently is just sharing and holding the data in there.
Well, another thing that, you know, as just user of libraries, one thing I like about seeing more and more libraries going to coroutines that it's the same language, right? Like I learned coroutines once and then I know how to use all those libraries. They don't all end up with different constructs and where to do multi-threading, sharing, and all that stuff. And even, you know, NRX is very popular, so there's a lot of libraries built around it, but it kind of forces you to adopt RxJava, which you may or may not want. And coroutines, I feel, at least to me, it's easier to adopt because it's part of, you know, it's part of Kotlin. I mean, not completely, but it feels less forced upon me than a random library.
Yeah, totally. It's more of a language feature right. than something that is a library that, you know, maybe one person, maybe a lot of people are maintaining, but there's, yeah, it is just a library. So what we realize is that because you have to pass in the scope when you make a flow, sharing didn't work in coroutines and didn't work in flow. You know, you have your first subscriber has scope one. You have the second subscriber. It has a different scope from a different view model or a different life cycle. And how are you going to share this? So a lot of the work that as we were churning, Yeet kind of brought this up. You know, we wrote it and then we rewrote it and then we wrote it again. And it was for this, for we could not get a good construct that already existed for we want to make a flow and we want to share it among many consumers. So there's something called a multicaster within the store library. It started as just a class, then two, then three, and actually became its own module that we're releasing as its own library. So you can just depend on the multicaster. And it gives you the share functionality where you could either pass in the scope for where you're sharing between all your consumers, or it will use a global scope and allow you to share.
So and so, if my understanding is correct, this multicaster is completely independent of the rest of store.
That's right. Okay. That's right. It's a store under the hood uses the multicaster, but you can just use the multicaster on it.
So when do you contribute it back to JetBrains.
Someone asked about it in the Kotlin conf, and I was like, I mean, I wrote most of the implementation. I don't feel comfortable. Like, I don't know coroutines that well. It's like, I'm ashamed to submit that code.
Okay. We're also ashamed for you.
I know. But my code is open source anyway. So the very interesting thing is, we did that in store, and then I was working on paging. The paging tree like hits the exact same problem. You want to share some paging information between multiple clients, but like maybe only a part of it. Like, you might have different transformations based on the UI, but the core data is the same, whatnot. And I needed this, and that was before store shipped. So I just like went, copied the code I wrote in store into paging and started using it. And then since we have shipped now, I'm just going to change that dependency. So even though how paging and store works together is not a resolved problem yet, paging will be depending on a piece of store code. Now that MM is this multicasting.
So for Raman's question, though, like, if it is such a core piece of functionality that you could not make work with the language, like, is it worth talking to the folks that do the language and trying to figure out if there's a way to embed this?
There has been a share operator that's been an open issue within the coroutines repo. They are working on it. Okay. It did not get created by the time we made ours. And this one is a little bit, I wouldn't say specific to store, but has some additional configuration, as in being able to know if you have subscribers and your producer does not emit anything before that stream stops, we will make sure to know, you know, subscriber 1 and 2 got a value, 3 did not. We still have to restart a new upstream flow to get the late consumer whatever some amount of data.
Okay, so maybe there's something still there, although it seems like you could rewrite that on top of language functionality.
Yeah, exactly. We're kind of waiting for them to write a sleeker one that we're using a few high-level constructs like actors that we feel that the Kotlin team should be able to do at a more low level, and then we can piggyback on their implementation to do our proxy around it.
Okay.
Yeah, we did. I mean, we do have a document explaining how it works, and we did share this in that bug with other people. And this is actually, I think, how people came and asked us to like exclude it from the library so they can start using it. Because like it's still better than not having anything. People want to use it. So we did that. Like, it's still usable, but having that specific to store also gives us advantages. Like, there's one bug we are working on right now is actually if we solve it in that layer, it's actually easier for us, even though it may not work well. As a Kotlin API from store's perspective, it's not a public API from store's perspective. And it totally makes sense for store to solve that problem there. So, you know, maybe we will not try to push too hard to make it an API so that we can change it however we want.
And aside from multicasting, was there, you know, not necessarily in version 4, but in store in general, was there any other part of the code that was very difficult, that was a challenge?
Sure. Error handling.
Well, that's always a challenge.
Yeah, because you want to save data to your caches, but you're not saving your errors to your caches. You're also working with observable streams, and you don't want to break the streams. So trying to do that coordination of allow upstream to continue, get the errors from network, and propagate them directly to your consumers without passing through the source of truth, while still being able to collect source of truth and pass through when you have good data coming through.
That does not sound fun at all.
So this is it. Like, for example, think about, again, let's go back to Twitter application. You open Twitter, let's say you don't have network, but you opened it 5 minutes ago as well, so you have auto tweets there. You really don't want those tweets to disappear, right? Oh, like, there was an error. So technically, that list of tweets is coming as a flow, a stream of tweets, and at somewhere in that flow, there has been an error. So if you just consider this as a regular stream of tweets, is either a list of tweets or an error. So if it is an error, there's nothing to show in the UI. What we ended up doing in store is abstract this out. So instead of saying what store returns you is a stream of tweets, we say we return you a stream of store responses. And this response can be a loading state. So we tell you, like, if you're loading data, it can be data or it can be an error. This allows us to, like, if a store stream fails, like throws an exception, that's a real, real exception that your application is crashing. If it's a normal, like, expected thing, like, you know, not being able to access the network, then it's going to come as a store response error while you still have the data and then you're still observing the database. So it's then like when in the error case, you might think, well, I will just keep the tweets I was showing. And if an error came, I will, you know, the stream finished, I will stop refreshing. But then what happens if user hits the like button there? Because it's going to go change the database. You want your UI to update, but you just broke the stream, so it's not going to update. With this wrapper in store, because we also consider errors as data, it will still observe your source of truth. So even if you don't have network, it will keep flowing as the data changes. And I was I think this is different than store 3, right, Mike? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Because store 3 didn't work with observable sources. The error is you're either getting a data or an error response. You don't have to worry about the next response that comes through.
Right. Okay. Yeah, and I'm not surprised that errors are challenging, something like this. And I remember the question I had earlier, like, so you mentioned several times, you know, using the network or file system, but could I just use store, like, you know, if I have to do heavy computations, you know, my network layer would just be like crazy computations. Basically, you handle all the networking, all the multi-threading and caching for me. Like, is that a stupid way of using store or?
I don't think so. As long as you have some fetcher for how to get new data, I kind of think of the same way that paging sets up their builder of you just need a data source, a remote right. source and a local source.
So this data source can be procedural and just...
Precisely, yeah. Precise. I kind of thought about it too. Maybe you could even do one database as your fetcher source and then another database as right. your source of truth so that you can do multiple layers of caching.
Replication.
Yeah, but again, it's like we try to make it generic so that it... Not saying that's the use case that we thought about, but I don't think there's anything that will stop you from doing
actually,
that.
Like one major thing we changed from store 3 was also we started considering the network type and the database type different. And it's actually very common. Like when you fetch some data from your API, it's not necessarily how you persist it in your database. It's not necessarily how you use it on your UI. And before, this needed to be the same type in store. So we changed it such that your database function you provide us, it may say, let's say I receive a user DTO, like a user data transfer object, and I save it. But when I read from the database, I return user value object for the UI. And you can say this, and like store basically understands all of this. So we also like try to make store very practical because we know how real applications are written that way.
No, I mean, that makes a lot of sense to be able to have different representations for transport and for...
And then, like, thanks to Kotlin, we just, like, these are still just functions. You're not really defining any generics, whatnot. It's like, I don't know. The API is, I believe, is beautiful. You know?
I do,
best.
Too. Yeah.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah. One other that you kind of mentioned, the complex computation. One of the original use cases, and I'm glad we still support it, you know, we're talking about getting multiple... data where we're getting the data as it exists as, you know, an array or some kind of data model. It works with streams as well. So one of the use cases that I love to use store with, network is returning to me a buffered source, which is a stream type that OKIO can give and OKHTP can give. I then have the source of truth having an input type of buffered source and an output type of whatever my parsed data is.
Right, that makes sense.
Yeah, so then I can actually stream data from network to the source of truth and never have to parse it in between. We ran into this at New York Times because we had articles and they would just be a single string that's returned to you. And even though it's a 10 megabyte string and you should be able to hold it in memory, you don't have 10 megabytes continuous memory. So we made sure to dump them on disk and then inflate them at a moment where we know that we have that much continuous memory.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Yeah, that sounds like a very nice library.
I want to rewind to a comment you made earlier and maybe... minor correction and then a question, which is Android doesn't seem to like RxJava. And I would say that was not my impression.
Chat?
Well, it's more that like, I think we recognize that a lot of developers use it. We don't use it internally because, well, it's not ours. We don't use external things that we can't depend on because, you know, we're building sort of at that core level. We understand a lot of people use it. And I think we even integrate RxJava into some of the APIs for Android X, right? So I think that's wrong in that we respect that people are using it. And if it works for you, that's great. We're not trying to write things to take the place of it. My understanding is that some of the stuff that we're doing with, I don't know, live data may replace small parts of it. So if you're looking at this specific piece of functionality, here's a way to do that without sucking in this whole other way of writing applications, or coroutines are an approach to another thing that RxJava solved. So I think that all makes sense for us, that people either use it or don't, and we have things that don't replace it entirely. They are parallel to some of its functionality. But where did the comment come from? Like, from your experience as an app developer, where did that come from?
Yeah, besides Room, which returns RxJava, I haven't used any other Android X components or Android APIs, which allow me to return something as an observable as the base type.
Okay, so it's more an observation that our APIs don't really recognize it as a first-tier citizen.
That's right. I think I've seen futures more in Android APIs than I have Rx, but from apps perspective that I've used, I don't see a lot of apps that are using futures.
And is it difficult to then use RxJava if the libraries you're using are not returning those types directly? Like, do you then need to write abstractions around all the Android APIs?
That's what I've been doing. Firebase is a good example. Okay. Firebase has its own callbacks, and I've had to write bindings that then go from callbacks to RxJava, which then you're managing errors and you're managing multicasting, and it starts getting more complicated than just leaving it up to whoever the library developers are to do it. SQL Delight is a good example. SQL Delight had first-class RxJava support. Yep. I'm glad that Room followed it once other database had it as well, but it would be nice if generally things that can return live data can return Rx observables.
So part of that for us, I mean, it's related to what I was saying earlier about what I like about coroutines. Like, it's hard for us to give you something that will impose another dependency, right? You're already taking one. So I think I really like the way Room has it, where RxJava is a separate library, the support for it. So if we can do it this way, that makes sense, but it can be hard to do it in a lot of places. And that's why you see a lot of futures, is because, well, everybody has access to them.
Also,
better or worse.
Yeah, for some background information in this topic, like, when we created live data, like, we actually didn't want to create any observable class. We did user studies, and this is like four years ago or so, when we started the first parts of architecture components. And at that time, we saw, like, people, RxJava has a very divided community, as in, like, some people love it and some people hate it. But the one consistent thing was the learning curve, which is very, very important from our perspective, because imagine you are trying to write a new Android application. You have to learn the whole framework, all these life cycles on, like, anything you add on top of this has a very high cost, and RxJava is already complicated. So our solution was, okay, let's give people a simple reactive solution that they can use, make this work well with RxJava, and support RxJava everywhere where we support live data, which for architecture components, we are doing it, but I understand there's like a lot of existing
APIs. Data binding is a great example. Yeah. We can bind a live data to our to the data binding, to the binding. It'd be great to be able to bind a RxJava observable as well there.
You're right. Yeah.
I feel like that's like, another episode, though.
Exactly. But with Kotlin coroutines, because we said Kotlin first development, and coroutines is part of the language, and Flow is part of coroutines, actually, it suddenly becomes the features for us. Like, what we had in Java, you could use feature without the dependency. Now you can use Kotlin coroutines almost without the dependency. Or, like, you know what? If everybody gets this dependency, we are able to write a much nicer base API, which we are doing in paging. Like, paging tree will still have wrappers for probably RxJava and listenable feature, but they will be based off of Kotlin coroutines. And this is why we were okay to go with Kotlin coroutines and Flow, where we were not okay to go with RxJava. I don't know if that makes sense.
Totally. I think coroutines is the happy medium that everyone seems to be aligning on.
Until we get something better.
Excellent.
And then we'll have to rewrite all those libraries again. That's how we keep our jobs, right?
Yeah, that's software engineering.
Yeah, and just to kind of wrap that up, the JetBrains team writing the coroutines library does have coroutines to Rx observable bindings. And this was one of the reasons why we were comfortable going to coroutines with store. We didn't need to write our own wrappers. The wrappers already exist as libraries that just lets you do extensions of Flow to observable or observable to Flow. So we can bridge those back and forth without us having to do the work. And really what you're describing of, like, maybe paging will also return Rx, it doesn't need to anymore, since you can just leverage wrappers that exist.
That might not work that well because like the way you build store, you're providing a couple of suspend functions. Now, if you are not on Kotlin coroutines, like how do you even create that suspend function to turn it into a Rx Java maybe? Whatever. Yeah, so it's like, yeah, anyway, API design is complicated. Yeah,
it's hard.
Another episode.
All right, so store seems incredibly useful. Where can we find it exactly? So on GitHub, but under which...
Dropbox.com/store.
Dropbox.com/store.
Well, and they love that I took that as the name, so no one else.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that sounds like the URL you don't want to take away from.
Yeah, New York Times Store was pretty angry too, since most of the links going to New York Times Store should go to selling the New York Times, not to our library.
You've ruined their revenue model forever for an open source library. I love it. So yeah, I'll put the link in the show notes. Also, a link to the KotlinConf talk, and send me other links you have. And I think that's it.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.